Welcome back to the second hour of Better Lawns and Gardens from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. I'm Teresa Watkins. I'm a landscape designer, horticulturist, garden expert. I love to help people with their landscapes and their gardening questions. And if you haven't done it already, put our number in your phone, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680. And you can ask your question that way. We'd love to hear from you. We have Lizzie at the keyboards. Thank you so much, Lizzie. You do not know how much you are so appreciated because you can deal with all this equipment.
Well, thank you so much for trusting me.
And so we're going to have Heather Stickney coming up with Summit Responsible Solutions. And she is the expert on it. And she's going to give us a lot of great scientific, which is not going to be boring, scientific information about how mosquito bits and dunks work. And so we're excited to have her on. Let's go to the dirty word of the day.
And now it's time for the dirty word of the day on Better Lawns and Gardens with Teresa Watkins.
And the dirty word of the day is surfactant. Surfactant are surface active compounds that lower water surfaces tension, which means the ability to absorb water, helping spread evenly anything that it is combined with. Okay, if you spread it evenly on the plant leaves, soil, or growing medium, the term surfactant was coined in 1950, and it comes from surface active agent. That's the phrase, surface active agent. Because surfactants contain both water-repelling and water-attracting components, they act as emulsifiers, allowing water and oil to mix. The surfactants are widely used in commercial chemicals. Households and industries rely on them in large quantities for detergents and cleaners, as well as emulsifiers, wetting agents, foaming agents, and dispersants. Surfactants occur naturally in plant-based detergents, such as horse chestnuts and soap nuts, and in the secretions of some caterpillars. While many common surfactants are derived from petroleum, they are increasingly being made partly or entirely from renewable biomass, including sugars, vegetable oil-based fatty alcohols, biofuel products, and other biological materials. Surfactants serve two main purposes: water management. And in water management, the surfactants help container substrates, soilless media, and peat-rich mixes absorb and distribute water more evenly. By reducing dry spots and runoff while improving water retention, they can decrease irrigation needs and labor costs, which benefit nurseries, greenhouses, and hydroponic systems. They are also used in pesticide and nutrition efficiency. In spray applications, surfactants combined with a pesticide work as adjuvants that help pesticides and foliar nutrition adhere to, spread across, and penetrate plant surfaces. This improves coverage and uptake, strengthening pest control and nutrition delivery. So when you're spraying a chemical and you're seeing it just drip right off and it doesn't even stay on the leaf, that's when you need to use a surfactant to help it stick to the leaf. So the dirty word of the day is surfactant.
You know what? My grandmother always said, if you didn't learn something new every day, the day was completely a waste. So you did it. Thank you.
You're welcome. And so we have some great text messages coming up. I'm going to get to them in just a minute. And we have Heather Stickney with Summit Responsible Solutions coming up. I do have some time. Let me just get some couple of questions, text messages out. And so we did have William call in and said he had difficulty shopping and getting out. And, we've had some suggestions from our listeners saying that nurseries have free pots that they will give away. The thing is that today nurseries, any industry, to have things delivered, some nurseries don't have that availability. So, I think it's a good suggestion. Maybe he could ask someone to stop by and pick them up and bring them to him. That would be worth it. So also, too, Ken in Northwest Orlando, He says, my Bismarck palm is struggling from the freezes. It was a housewarming gift from my mother. Can it be saved? Well, if it's still growing now and some of the fronds they look good and you have new fronds coming up, it is going to survive. So hang in there, Ken. Just make sure in the fall you fertilize it again and then keep looking for those fronds coming up. If it looks like it's getting a fungus issue, you could spray the top of it with a fungicide that will prevent disease from getting into the fronds. But I think your Bismarck palm is going to be pretty good. They are pretty winter tolerant. And so it just may need, when was the last time it got fertilizer over the last few years? So it just may be something that it might just need a little bit more nutrition. And that will be good. Question, one more answer here. Good morning, Teresa. Susan in Tallahassee. She has a lot of planted containers in her landscape. Large colonies of ants seem to love my containers. Is there a way to keep containers ant-free? Yes, you can use ant bait, Susan. You can use ant bait and sprinkle it around the bottom of the tub where you've got a little bit of area there where the ants can get in underneath and come up. And then also use the bait on the top of your containers. I probably wouldn't use them in anything that's edible, but everything else you can use them in. So that'll be good. We're going to be back with Heather Stickney, Summit Responsible Solutions, and she is going to help us with science, and we're going to have a lot of fun with her. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens, and we are welcoming back Heather Stickney. She is with Summit Responsible Solutions, and they are makers of mosquito bits and mosquito dunks and a whole host of other products that are environmentally safe for your landscape and take care of really the pesky issues. Good morning, Heather. How are you?
Good morning, Teresa. I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
I am great. So now you are in Ohio, and you've been getting some extreme weather there. Are you? What's it been like?
So fortunately for us, in the part of the world I sit in Ohio, it has not been too bad. We've had some heavy rain, but we've not seen some of the more severe weather that they've gotten a little bit further east and south of us. So I'm counting my blessings. We've been fortunate.
Oh, good. I'm so glad. So our regular listeners, they know and they love using mosquito bits and dunks, but we have new listeners every week, Heather. So I'm really, really pleased about that, who are just learning about Summit Responsible Solutions. So I want to go straight to the source. Can you tell everybody what mosquito bits and mosquito dunks are?
Sure. So mosquito bits and mosquito dunks are both made with an active ingredient called BTI. BTI is a soil-borne bacterium that is toxic specifically to mosquito larvae. So in the case of dunks, they're little beige kind of donut-shaped discs that are designed to float on water and kill mosquito larvae in standing water. Bits are designed for broadcast application, and they cover a broader area and do a very quick kill of any mosquito larvae that you might have in your standing water.
Okay, that is great. And so it's BTI, and it's safe for humans and animals. What about birds and pollinators like bees?
The interesting thing about BTI is that it is really only toxic to mosquito larvae. So in the case of bits, it will also control fungus gnat larvae. But you don't have to worry about toxicity to things like bees, wildlife, birds, fish, if you're using it in a koi pond. Or some type of application like that. It really is only toxic to mosquito larvae.
Excellent. That is so good to hear. So we had an interesting call from Polly in Oviedo, and she was confused when she used the mosquito duck. It was getting foamy, and she saw some kind of larva in them wriggling. What's going on there? How do mosquito dunks work?
That is really an interesting question, Polly, and very observant to notice the foaming. it was likely not the dunk itself that was foaming. The foaming may have been caused by surfactants that were already in the water. And when that dunk was added, it may have agitated the water to cause that foaming to happen. Same thing with the wrigglers. The wrigglers are the mosquito larvae, and they were likely already in the water. So an increase in activity may have been a result of that dunk being placed in the water. But the dunk will do its job. It'll start to dissolve. The larva in the water will ingest that active ingredient, and you won't have adult mosquitoes coming from the water as a result.
Excellent. I'm so pleased to hear that. So George in Claremont, I was talking to him, and he wants to know, how long do mosquito bits work? Is there an easy way to know when to refresh them or replace them?
So, yes, George, for mosquito bits, they will typically last 7 to 14 days. So depending on how large your mosquito population is and how many mosquitoes you may have laying eggs in standing water, I would recommend reapplying once a week, every 7 days. If populations are a little bit lower, you might be able to get away with 14 days. But generally speaking, reapplication every 7 to 14 days for most effective results.
Okay, so that's for the mosquito bits. How long about the mosquito dunks?
The dunks last a little bit longer. They float on water, and they dissolve over a period of 30 days, maybe a little bit longer. So about once a month is when I would recommend re-adding a dunk. You'll see it start to dissolve over time. It'll just sort of disappear. About every 30 days.
Okay, so that's great. So, I mean, we are at the start of a really, really severe mosquito season. So this is the time everybody's asking about mosquitoes. I'm seeing it on our TV, our news this week. So I had a neighbor ask me, they have a water garden in their backyard, and it has moving water. So where in the pond should they put the mosquito bits?
The fact that they have moving water is going to make their pond a little less attractive to mosquitoes that want to come in and lay their eggs. If they have areas in the pond that are a little bit more still, that might be the best place to place a dunk, but that's going to float around. I would look for areas around the pond. For example, if they have pots with saucers underneath where there might be some standing water, that might be a good place to put them.
That may be where the mosquitoes are coming from, not the water garden.
Correct. Okay. If they have areas of standing water around the pond, that might be a better place to put those.
Okay, so mosquitoes can lay eggs in a thimbleful of water. A thimbleful, Heather, that is not a lot. That's not even a gulp.
They don't need a lot. Nope, they don't need a lot.
And mulch, especially the large pine bark or pine bark as a rule, has those little curved areas. You can use them as little serving platters, you know, for insects and for frogs and things like that. They're flat and they're rounded, so they can hold that water. Can mosquito bits be used in mulch?
It's generally speaking not an application that we recommend. However, if that mulch is holding water, yes, I would say that you could use those in the mulch to help keep populations down or to help control any larva that might be present.
Okay. Now, Lizzie is having a party, and she has a standing water on her property. What can she use just generally as a spray for the entire yard to get rid of like ticks and fleas and mosquitoes?
I would recommend a permethrin-based spray in terms of controlling adult populations. Summit makes a tick and flea spray as well as a mosquito and gnat barrier. They're essentially the same thing. But they are going to control the adult populations, and you'll want to apply that where you might find mosquitoes or ticks harboring. So in brushy areas around the property, mosquitoes like to land on fencing. So if Lizzie has fencing in her yard, she might want to spray that to help control some of those adult populations.
That's interesting. They sit on the fence?
They do, yes. Yep.
Okay, that is crazy.
Isn't
what
that crazy?
Stalkers.
That's funny. Okay, so how soon or how early before the party should she use the spray?
typically it will begin working very quickly. So I would say a day or two before. The spray, depending on weather conditions, will last up to 30 days. So if she wants to get ahead of it and spray a week before, she should be good. She should be good to do that.
That's wonderful. And rain won't dampen it or anything if it rains afterwards.
Again, depending on conditions, if you get a heavy rain, you might need to reapply again.
Okay.
But if it stays relatively sunny and dry, you should be good.
Oh, wonderful. So now summer is here and it's time for camping and going away on trips and hiking. What do you have that will help somebody who is camping out in the woods?
So we make a spray. It's called Green Armor Insect Repellent for Clothing and Gear. And it is designed to be used with a skin repellent for things like ticks and mosquitoes. It essentially adds a layer of protection to you to help keep ticks, mosquitoes, and other biting pests away. So you spray it on your jackets, your shoes, your hats, backpacks. You can spray your tent, your nylon chairs. Essentially, that's going to add a barrier of protection to help keep those nuisance pests away.
Oh, excellent. That is such great news. So Heather, where can people find Mosquito Bits and Dunks and then Green Armor? How can they get that?
So definitely at your local home centers, hardware stores, local garden centers, farm and fleet stores, you can find Mosquito Dunks and Bits. Our products are also available online. So you can look for them online at summitresponsiblesolutions.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Heather, for sharing and for being part of, Better Lawns and Gardens. We do appreciate you sponsoring the program. Lizzie, you have a question.
Yes. What was the name of the product that you were saying I needed to spray for my event?
Oh, so it's called Tick and Flea Spray, or it's also under the label Mosquito and Gnat Barrier.
Thank you. I appreciate that so much.
Certainly.
There you go, Heather. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate you. Stay safe up there. And we'll have you back on real soon. Thank you so much, Heather.
Thank you, Teresa.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. I love her. She's so smart about all her products, but the company is an excellent company, organic, environmentally safe, mm-hmm. and their products work.
Yes, and they are a sponsor of the show. However, I've used them for years, and I have used the gnat barrier and mosquito barrier around the turkey pen area, and it really does help. So
that's interesting.
I love that.
Yeah, because your turkeys do get mosquitoes, don't they?
Oh, it's crazy. So, I mean, they'll have their fans, like pretty hard-blowing fans, and they like to perch in front of that, and I know mm-hmm. I had the fans there to blow the mosquitoes off of them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just needing a little bit of thing that I can do to help to keep mosquitoes away, especially in the state of Florida, I'll take it. Especially
there you go.
Safe for our animals.
State bird. Yeah, huh? It's a state bird. Our state bird
mosquitoes.
I'm just sure Simon probably already knows that.
Yes. Yeah, well, he used to live here too. So
he knows all about that. Okay, so now the turkeys. Tell us about the turkeys. Do they still sit in your lap?
Yeah, they still try to. They're way too big now. So,
How big are they?
Gerald's probably pushing about 40, maybe 50 pounds.
Wow.
So, but he's the smaller of the ones that we've had in the past. So, we've had 80 pounds apiece, turkeys. So, but yeah.
How many do you have?
We are down to seven.
So seven.
We had 22, and this is the seven that we'll probably end up keeping. So, yeah.
And so how many females, how many males?
We have four females and three males, and the females lay eggs. Yeah. And so
they're big eggs too.
They're huge. They fill up the entire palm of your hand, and they also run 11 to 13 grams of protein per egg.
Wow, that's really great. That is super. Well, we want to thank Heather Stickney with Summit Responsible Solutions. If you'd like to go, you can go to their website, SummitResponsibleSolutions.com, and check out their products. You can get them online and in your hardware stores. I know that for a fact. So if it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. It's time for your phone calls. Whether you have a gardening question, gardening design question, I can help you. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680, like Rick in Havana. Rick in Havana says, good morning, Teresa. Is it too late to start grass from seed, Bahia or Zoysia? Well, you can't get Zoysia seed, but you can get Bahia. Get Argentina Bahia, and now is a great time to put down Bahia seed. Okay, Argentina Bahia seed. You need at least 8 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks of warm temperatures, temperatures over 85 degrees for the Bahia grass to get started. And we have plenty of time for that. So it'll be 85 all the way through December. So he's got plenty of time.
Exactly.
So go ahead and get that grass seed, Rick. Good question. So morning, Lizzie. It's Daryl, the Earthbox lady. Hi, Daryl. And so she was at one of the box stores, clearance plants. She found a tea plant, and she wanted to know if she should do anything special to keep it alive. The last time she saw an actual tea plant, she was in the first grade when her dad was stationed in Japan.
Can you explain what a tea plant is?
A tea plant is a camellia sinensis.
Okay,
okay?
Right.
So she found one that had been put on the shelf. So, you know, those sales shelves.
I love those.
Yes.
I bring all those back to life.
Always buy orchids off the sale shelf. Buy all the plants off the sale shelf and bring them home and rejuvenate them. And so, yeah, you just want to make sure if it is a camellia sinensis. Now, there's a New Zealand tea tree that is not the same thing. It's got little pinkish purple flowers. It's not the same thing. But a camellia sinensis needs acidic soil. You need to use acidic fertilizer. You can use an acidic soil acidifier, and that's it. Just fertilize it, keep it watered. It takes shade. It can take full sun. Camellias can take full sun, but while it's stressed out, and plants on the sale shelves are always stressed out, I would keep it in the shade. So, good question, good find. That's a great find, and so that is great. So. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680. So Janice sent me, she's in Orlando, she sent a picture, a great picture of a hibiscus with hibiscus leaves with holes eaten in them. And so she asked what it was, and it's a hibiscus sawfly. So it's a little caterpillar. It's from a wasp. It's not from an actual fly, but they attack. Just remember what I say, you know, when you're selecting plants, you know, try not to get plants with insects named after them. So like azalea caterpillars, because you're going to get those caterpillars. A hibiscus sawfly, you're probably going to get those. And you can just use a neem oil product. Don't do it in the heat of the day, Janice. You want to make sure you're doing it in the early morning or later on, late at dusk time. Hibiscus don't like to have pesticides sprayed on them. The oil will be okay. Just do it in the non-stressful periods of the day. That will be good. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680. And you can just ask any questions. Peterson's Nursery is going to have a proper pruning practices program at Peterson's Nursery at 9:30 a.m. today. You've got plenty of time to get down there, and you can learn all about how to prune your plants. So a lot of plants are still, you know, showing that they have not been pruned back from the winter. The plants are recovering, especially the scheffleras, the umbrella plants. They still have sticks on them. I'm seeing as I drive down the road. Go ahead and cut those sticks off. Let the new growth come out. Norfolk Island pines, cut off the brown branches and let the new growth emerge. You're seeing that. And then also, too, you can add new plants. Now, when you're talking about adding new plants, I tell you always to check for the sunlight conditions, the moisture, soil moisture conditions, how wet does it stay, and then the pH. But another thing to make sure that you're looking for are the zones. And the zones for that I plant here in Central Florida are for 8 to 11. Now, if you're planting for 8 or, you know, lower, which I mean 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 3 is all the way up in Canada, that means that that plant can handle those conditions in the winter time. So if you're doing 8, if it gets down to 20 degrees, your plant's going to survive. Okay, so when you're trying to decide on plants, select zone plants from zones 8 to 11. And 11 is, you know, down in Key West, Miami area, and that means it can take the heat. So that's the zones you want to go in. If you select plants for Central Florida that are only good for zones 10 through 11, that means your pygmy date palms, that means your queen palms, that means your foxtail palms, or any of the tropical plants like your hibiscus and also some of the tropical crotons, the let's see what else are the ones that were damaged. There was a lot of damage on the mandevillas and alamandas. They're always going to get hit every year. Okay, so every freeze we have, you're going to have to get out there and cover them with boxes or with cloths on sticks. You never want to put the cloth right directly on the plants or use frost blankets. And you're going to have to do that every year. But if you buy plants that are zoned for 8, they're going to survive the wintertime. The plumbagos did fine. The camellias did fine. The roses did fine.
Well, if we didn't learn anything in the last couple of years, we definitely learned something new this last year for sure. So
exactly. No, we do get those freezes that damage. That's, again, one of the reasons why we don't have a citrus industry, where the back-to-back freezes in the 80s plus the disease problems. But those disease problems, you know, were acerbated by the freezes. So zones 8B to 11 here in Central Florida, up in North Florida, down in Miami, you'll be just fine. It's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Better Lawns and Gardens. If you missed any of the previous hour and this hour and you want to hear it again, you can go to the iHeartRadio app and download it. It's free, very easy to use on a phone that works or a computer. I'm having phone issues right now. And so you can do that. You can also, it will be posted. I'll post it on our Facebook page later on this afternoon. And also, too, you can
go to betterlawns.com.
Betterlawns.com.
The first hour is already posted there now. So.
It is. Yeah. You can hear it all again. And if you do not get us on a radio station, ask your radio stations to put our program on. They will like that.
Let me know it's 2 hours, because from what I understand, there's one station or two out there that has us only on for 1 hour.
Exactly.
So whenever you call it or request for your local station to carry us, say, hey, it is a 2-hour show. And so.
We would like that. Also, too, we have posted our Art and Bloom garden tours for 2027. Are up. We are doing waiting lists right now while we're finalizing details. But if you'd like to have more information about traveling, we go to beautiful gardens, stay in lovely accommodations, and we just visit historic venues, and the gardens are just incredible. We do have some spots left this year for our Buffalo Garden Tour. If you're interested in that, we go to the largest garden walk in the United States.
Oh, wow.
But we don't go on the weekend where they go. We have a special time that we go, and we have the gardens all to ourselves. And we're also including in that tour a passage over into Canada. We're going to go visit Niagara Falls And so we have opportunities for there. And then we also have spots left on our New Orleans, the Ethereal Gardens of New Orleans for October, which it will be lots of fun. And you can go to artandbloomgardentours.com and check out all our tours. Get on the waiting list, and we would love to join you. Next week, Tom McCubbin will be here. And I know everyone will enjoy that. So you're going to want to chime in and call in, and he is going to be here. So that'll be great. So if you are planting new plants right now, and this is Florida, we can plant year round. We won't necessarily do it before a hurricane is approaching or during a freeze time period in December and January. But we can usually plant year round here. But if you're planting in the heat of the day right now for the next few months, make sure that your plants are watered before you put them in the ground. And then when you dig the hole, you want to dig the hole twice the width, same depth. You want to leave the plant out of the ground 1 to 2 inches, because in our sandy soils, and even in, you know, we have good organic soils, the soil is going to sink, and you want the plants to be at the height, the same level as the ground. If you plant them level with the ground, when they sink, they're going to be too low, and that mulch over the top is going to cause problems. The plant's not going to be able to breathe. It's going to get rot. You don't want to do that. So you want to water the plant before you plant it. Then in the hole, you want to fill that up 2 to 3 times so that the ground is saturated before you put that plant in the ground. Now, what that's going to do is kind of like clay pots. When you plant a clay pot, that clay is going to wick out the water from the soil. The same with the ground. The ground is going to wick out that water from the root ball. So if the plant is been hydrated enough, the root ball is wet, the hole is wet, and then you water it in, your plant's going to be good. And your plants, your new plants, are going to need at least 2 to 3 months. Get it through the summertime so that it can become established, and then you don't. Then it'll be okay for the rest of the time. You want to get it off to a good start. If you're planting sod, if you're laying sod, you want to water the sod once a day, or sometimes twice a day for zoysia and Bermuda grass, centipede grass. You want to water it once a day for the first week. You want to water it every 2 days the second week, and then water it every 3 days the third week. And by the end of the month, your sod, your turf, is already used to the twice a week waterings. We can, and it's allowed by law, that you can water for 30 days and sometimes in some areas 60 days every day. You don't want to do that to the turf. If you're watering every day, you are growing hydroponically, and those roots will never go down deeper. They're just going to stay right there at the surface. And they are going to be fat and happy, and they're just going to think it's great. They're going to be hydrated. They're going to be swimming around. And then at the end of the 30 days, you have to go to twice a week watering, and it's going to go into immediate shock. It's going to say, I need to water. So just make sure that you're not watering too much when you first put it down. Let it get used to the water and even the stress. The turf can wilt a little bit, and that doesn't mean it's dying. It just means it's going to need water in a few days, okay? So how do you know if your turf needs water? And this is for established lawns. If your turf, if you can walk across your turf and about 2 minutes later turn around and look, and if you can see your footprints in the grass, then you need to water. If you walk through your turf and turn around and look after a couple of minutes, and you don't see your footprints, the grass has enough hydration to spring back up again, you do not need to water your grass, okay? Watering, overwatering is one of the biggest problems in the state of Florida. And we are just blessed to have that water. But I will tell you, as we run out of potable water, we're never going to run out of water. We have the same amount of water we had millions of years ago. It's just that it's not in the same form. It's not potable. We have to clean it. We have to, to collect it. We just need to be good stewards of the water. and only use it when necessary. And in our rainy season, watering your yard during the summertime is not using it responsibly. Okay, push it down so that it can go. Your lawn, if healthy and established, can go a week to 10 days in the summertime without water. Now, that precludes you over-fertilizing, because when you fertilize, fertilizer at its base is salt, you're going to need to water it more. It precludes, you know, the new plants that need to be established first, and they're going to stress out. They're not going to be as strong as an established lawn. And it also pesticides. So if you are spraying chemicals on your lawn on a regular basis, I don't know why you'd be doing that. You don't want to do it preventatively. You only want to do it when you see the insect problem. But you're going to need to use more water. Let's go to Lynn in Merritt Island. Good morning, Lynn. How can I help you?
Good morning. I just love to hear you girls. You just really make my day.
Thank you so much.
Yes, you're welcome. I wanted to ask you, I have three frangipangies and huge. They're way, way, way over my house.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, when I went out the first day or whatever, we had this horrible weather from November to May, like it seemed, that it was just, you never knew if it'd be freezing or it'd be down low and then it'd be hot.
Right. Right.
And I went out in my yard and I looked at my frangipangies because I had the yard of the month here a couple of years ago. And everybody just loved these beautiful pink flowers and that. But, you know, I looked at my trees and I thought, I wonder what happened to the base of my trees, because they were like black. And I just couldn't understand it and never thought about it, you know, how they weep when you pull a flower off and things like that. They have like a milky substance.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, I said to myself, I think these plants are dead. I think my trees, because some of them were like somebody threw tar on them from the bottom of the tree all the way up.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you know? I mean, I'm getting ready to, tomorrow, I'm getting ready to start cutting off cutting off the limbs. And how do you know how far to go? I mean, because the ones that are all the way black, I think they're dead all the way to the ground, aren't they?
Yes, they are. So what you want to do is go ahead and feel. Okay, so you can squish it. If it's squishy, then it means it's rotted inside, and you can go ahead and cut. Now, when you cut it back, you can also look in the inside, and it'll be disintegrated. It'll be, you know, black. You'll see some kind of mold in it, and that'll tell you, too, as well. Cut back until you find, you know, good, healthy tissue, okay?
But it's very possible that ones that are twice as tall as your house are dead all the way to the ground, huh?
Yes, it's possible this year. This year it is possible. Sorry to say. Okay, so just keep cutting. Now, if you find, so let's say you cut and you find two or three branches that are healthy, go ahead and cut those off and replant them. Okay, because you can kind of leave them, let them dry off for a few days, and then go ahead and replant them somewhere else in your yard. But thank you so much, Lynn, for being our last phone caller. We do appreciate it. We'd like to thank Heather Stickney with Summit Responsible Solutions, and she is wonderful. Mosquito Bits and Dunks, and then Green Armor and Yard, year-round yard spray is wonderful. Lizzie, thank you so much. I'll see you later. We'll celebrate 30 years with you and Shrek.
Thank you.
If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.
If you miss any of the show or want to recap any of the other shows, you can go to betterlawns.com. That's betterlawns.com.